Stand, please.
Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 10-5080 et al. El Paso Natural Gas Company Appellant, Navajo Nation versus United States of America et al. Mr. Stock for Appellant El Paso Natural Gas Company, Mr. Taylor for Appellant Navajo Nation, Mr. Gray for Appalese.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And may it please the court, I'm Jerry Stock from Greenberg Traurig here in Washington for El Paso Natural Gas Company, and I'd like to tell you why the district court judgment should be reversed. Regarding judicial review, UMTRCA precludes review of designations made and priorities established and nothing else. Now, the position of the government and the district court depends fundamentally on a finding that what the Department of Energy did in 2004 was a designation. Now, under the statute, that cannot be, because DOE's designation authority expired in 1979. DOE's designation authority under the statute is conferred by Section 7912A only. And under that section, the authority of DOE to make designations expired in 1979. DOE was required to and did make all of the designations under UMTRCA in 1979, or before the end of 1979. So what DOE did in 2004, which is at issue in this case, when it refused to remediate these two additional properties, was not and could not be a designation under the statute.
But under the statute, designations are made as to processing sites, right?
Yes.
And processing sites are defined to include vicinity properties, correct?
Yes, the definition of processing site includes vicinity properties.
And 7912E says that inclusion is part of the designation, right? Quote, the secretary may, after such 1 year period, include any areas described in 7911 as part of a processing site.
As part of a designated processing site.
Right.
That is correct.
No, it says as part of a processing site.
Yes.
So,
but that doesn't make what DOE did under 7912E2 a designation. Okay? The authority for what DOE did in 2004, which was make a decision about whether or not to include these two sites under the UMTRCA program. The authority for DOE to do that was conferred by 7912E2. That is not authority.
Your argument that that doesn't include the vicinity sites in the years after the first year depends entirely on your construction of E2, right? And particularly the distinction you draw between E1 and E2, and particularly the distinction between the word include in those subsections.
Well, not entirely, Your Honor. It also depends on the construction of 7912A, designation. What's precluded is a designation. Designations are addressed exclusively in 7912A.
As I say, that depends on your construction of E, seems to me.
Well, E doesn't authorize designations, is our position. It doesn't. I mean, designations.
I understand that it's your position, but we have the designation shall include, right?
That's
first,
in E1.
First one talks about, that's the language of E1. That's in the first year.
Yes.
And then in the out years, it's the secretary may include an area.
And, yes.
And your argument depends entirely on the proposition that including an area under E2 is totally different from including from a designation, including vicinity property in the first year?
It depends on what happens under E2 not being a designation. It's something else. It's part of the longer-term program, which was contemplated from the beginning. You know, as we've outlined in the briefs, explained in the briefs, this was a two-part program. There was a first-year program. Designations were to be made. Priorities established. Congress wanted a lot done promptly. But over time, Congress foresaw that what happened in this case might happen, which is these properties were not known to be contaminated in 1979. The contamination was discovered later, and it has been discovered. You know, the government has testified to Congress that these two properties are contaminated by radioactive material from the mill site. That's not in dispute. That was discovered later, and so this authority under E2 for DOE to later include additional properties is exactly what the statute was set up to do over the long term in situations like we have here where groundwater would migrate over time.
I think everyone agrees that that's what the program was set up to do. The only question is whether the review preclusion covers this after the first year period as well.
And that depends on a finding that what happened in 2004 when DOE made the decision in 2004 was a designation. And, you know, not to repeat the old ground, designation authority ended in the first year. What they did later was something else.
Let me ask you just a practical question here. In the responsive brief, there's a discussion about what's happened since, and this footnote on page 43 talking about how this $5 million was appropriated, at least as to one of these sites. What, if you were to prevail here, what more would you get that you haven't already gotten as a result of this later congressional action?
Well, the short answer, Your Honor, is everything. Nothing. No shovel's been turned. There have been 10 years of investigation.
Yes, there have been in the investigations. Now Congress has actually appropriated money. It's $5 million.
For surface, if you look at the footnote, surface remediation, what's the principal concern at both sites,
is the groundwater?
The groundwater, yes, Your Honor. And again, that fits with the statutory program because authority to remediate groundwater continues forever to today, so that in later years, DOE could include additional properties if the groundwater.
The next question is, the letter that was sent said, you know, we'd like to meet and discuss all of this.
Yes.
What would be the normal way of applying for this remediation relief? In other words, is there a formal procedure?
There's not a formal procedure.
Did the meeting occur?
There have been many meetings.
In response to this letter?
I don't know specifically whether a meeting occurred in response to the letter. The response from DOE said, we'll meet with you, so I presume it did.
So far as you know, then, just writing a letter saying what this letter said is sufficient. Nothing more need be done for the agency to understand that you are formally applying?
Well, the agency understood that, as is clear from the response letter. I mean, again, we've made that point in the brief. I mean, the agency action here is what came back from DOE. There can't be any question that they understood that UMTRCA was the relevant statute. They investigated it. If you look in the first paragraph, DOE investigated.
What I'm trying to understand is, in the letter, they said, you know, they don't agree with you about this migration. Then, in testifying before Congress, I gather, they took a different position. So I just want to understand what is the process by which you obtain the relief you're seeking.
Well, we didn't obtain the relief, which is why we're here, but we asked for the process is informal, the informal petition, the informal request. The government has responded, as you noted at the outset of our colloquy here, that with some other actions under different programs, but UMTRCA, you see, the reason this is important is that UMTRCA, the program, was tailor-made for this problem.
I know, and the government. What I'd like to understand is when I look at the entire statute, I see Congress said, you know, we did something in Colorado in 1972, now we're doing this, we want it done quickly, and then we want the agency to report to Congress as to, you know, what its designations are and what it proposes to do. And the implication is sort of then it's up to Congress to decide what comes next, as distinct from your interpretation that there's this two-stage program, the first part is over and the rest of it under E goes forward.
Well, the authority to remediate groundwater continues. That's DOE is remediating the ground. They have a pump and treat system at the Tuba City processing site that is ongoing, mm-hmm. and that is plainly authorized by this statute and occurring under this statute.
So nothing more for you to do is what I'm trying to just establish on this record, other than send the letter you did send.
I think that's right. I mean, there's no formal process. And again, what is crucial is what came back to us, which is the DOE decision, which is agency action, and it's final agency action. It was 6 years ago. It was a definitive statement that UMTRCA did not apply after DOE had investigated the program. They have proceeded, as you've noted, under by fits and starts under RCRA, under CERCLA, investigating. A lot of time has passed. The reason that UMTRCA is important is that the program was tailor-made for this kind of radioactive contamination from the
US. You keep saying that, and I mean, I think that's obvious. Everyone agrees with that, but that doesn't answer the question about what 7912D means.
Well, okay, 7912D means that first-year designation, there's no judicial review in the first year of first-year designations. If Congress wanted to preclude judicial review of any DOE actions, or in particular the DOE action that was taken here in 2004, they could easily have done it. They could have precluded...
I mean, that argument, which we hear all the time, mm-hmm. can be turned inside out. They wanted to limit the preclusion to designation under A plus priorities under whichever subsection that is. That would have been very easy to do.
Well, that's what they did. That's what the statute, that's what D says. I mean...
Except it doesn't mention the specific subsections. It's just designations.
I think what's crucial is that there's no authority outside of 7912A to make a designation. It requires
unless the designation includes,
pardon me?
Unless through the Secretary's action it has included vicinity property within designated areas.
But again, I would submit that is not a designation. It's not the DOE is doing something else under E2. They're including property. And on another point that's related, the notion of boundaries and altering the boundaries, something which the district court, I think, focused on at least in some significant part. You know, under A2, under 79A2, which is within the designation authority subsection, it says that the boundaries of the processing sites shall be determined as part of the designation under this subsection. So what we ask DOE to do under E2, which is remediate these sites, include these sites, doesn't really depend. We're not asking for alteration of the boundaries. We don't really care about the boundaries. What we care about is pumping and remediating the groundwater. The boundaries of these two sites that are at issue in the case today, we're not asking for any alteration of the boundaries. So that the boundary issue is confined by 79A2 to the initial designation. That was done. The boundaries stay the same. The boundaries of the processing site stay the same. We just want DOE to include these two additional properties in the program.
Why don't we move on here, and we'll give you a minute in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, appellant, the Navajo Nation.
May it please the court. My name is David Taylor, and I bring you greetings today from the Navajo Nation Department of Justice.
Thank you.
I am here today to make two very brief points, giving you the Navajo perspective on this matter. Point number one, all of the land in question in this litigation involves Indian trust land. That has legal implications. Point number two, the Navajo Nation entered into a cooperative agreement with the federal government on this matter in 1985. That has legal implications. Let's get back to the first. Everyone here knows, and this court has spoken often, about the trust responsibility that flows from the United States to the Indian tribes. But more importantly for this case, it means that it brings into play the canon of statutory interpretation that has been cited by this court many times in many places, most specifically in the Cobell decision of 2001, which says that statutes affecting Indians are to be liberally construed and any ambiguities are to be interpreted in favor of the tribes. This means that if you believe there is an ambiguity in the statute that we have been talking about, that ambiguity needs to be resolved in favor of the tribes. El Paso gets to take advantage of it. We are a party
in this case. How would you describe what that ambiguity is in the statutory language?
I don't think there is any ambiguity, Your Honor. I agree with what Mr. Stock said. Words are sacred in Navajo, and I'm not saying that just to be cute. That's a phrase that goes into Navajo case law after Navajo case after Navajo case.
So you think
we take the word designate
unambiguous?
I'm sorry, sir.
You think the statute's unambiguous?
Yes, I do. Uh-huh. Okay.
Counsel, we quite often have the Department of Justice on one side of a case and an independent agency on the other side. This is the first case in my experience where we have the Department of Justice on both sides of a case. And why can't the competing branches take it up to the Attorney General?
Well, Your Honor, I am not associated with the United States Department of Justice. Maybe I didn't make that clear.
I see. It's Department of Justice of the Navajo.
I report directly to Louis Danette Soucy, the Attorney General of the Navajo Nation.
Because often, of course, the Department of Justice is representing.
I have many friends on both sides in the courtroom today.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. The second point, and my time is getting short, is that the Navajo Nation entered into a cooperative agreement with the federal government. That cooperative agreement was entered into pursuant to Section 7915 of UMTRCA, not 7912. We believe that there are obligations and legal duties with respect to that.
And that's still in existence? And
yes, ma'am.
It didn't expire at the end of the 90s?
The cooperative agreement is renewed every year.
I see.
We believe there are duties with reference to that and obligations, and they have failed to perform those duties. And that's a separate basis, we believe, for liability.
Thank you,
Your Honor. And just my brief summation, if I could, that won't take more than 30 seconds, I hope. A lot of people believe that we are here today because the United States engaged in the greatest program of construction of weapons of mass destruction in the history of the world, and we won the Cold War. But as a result of that, we have legacy sites all over the Navajo Nation. The Navajo people have suffered and continued to suffer disproportionately to the rest of the country. We're here today to try to right some of that wrong.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Counsel for the United States Department of Justice.
May it please the court, my name is Michael Gray, and I'm here on behalf of the United States. I think I'll start, if I may, with Judge Rogers, your two practical questions. As to the Highway 160 site and the new legislation, My understanding is that there is no groundwater contamination, evidence of groundwater contamination at that site. Now, the groundwater problem is at the landfill site. And I think it's important to distinguish between the two. So I think the legislation really does resolve everything with respect to that site. It's hard to see what more they could get. As for the process for requesting...
Which site?
The Highway 160. The Highway 160 site. I'm sorry. As for the process for requesting the agency to designate a vicinity property...
But what about the other site?
Could I just...
Sorry.
As to the highway site, you're saying the legislation resolves everything because the investigation is ongoing, Congress has appropriated the money? So, in effect, is that part of the case moot?
I think at this point it probably is. They've already taken... they've entered into another cooperative agreement, giving some of the money, I think $4.5 million, to the Navajo to do the remediation. If that part of the case isn't completely moot now, it certainly will be when they finish the remediation. I think the appeal itself is probably not moot because the landfill site,
right.
They do allege groundwater contamination there. I think it's an open question whether any of that actually came from the mill. But I think that part of the case probably is still constitutionally live.
All right. And when you say it's an open question, United States government hasn't already acknowledged?
No. We acknowledged with respect to the Highway 160 site only. We've not acknowledged any responsibility with respect to the...
Even in the congressional testimony?
Yeah, the congressional testimony relates... To the Highway 160 site. That's right. I do want to also address the question of the process. There's not a formal regulatory process, by regulation, by which you would apply. But the way this has worked in the past is that you make an actual request to the agency in the form, informally, in the form of a letter, and then the agency has taken an action where they publish in the Federal Register a proposed decision. Going one way or the other. And an example of that is 53 Fed Reg 15273. And then they have a comment period on that. And then they publish a final decision as to whether they're going to designate that vicinity property. And an example of that...
Even when they turn down a request?
This is the way they would turn down. This is the way historically they have turned down petitions. Is they publish a notice in the Federal Register and say we've been asked. Here's our proposed decision. They take comments on it and then they publish a final decision. An example of the latter would be 53 Fed Reg 27332. So I think there's a serious deficiency here in the letter that they sent, in that it doesn't actually mention the statute or...
Their argument, though, isn't it that, taking your argument, that there is no regulatory process, so if you write a letter and the agency's response makes it perfectly clear that they understand that you're asking for something, and they say you can't have it, but that's all that needs to be done.
I think that you have to, if you're asking the agency to take an action, you have to actually ask the agency to take the action and not request a meeting. And I think that, here the letter that the Department of Energy sent is certainly not an, unequivocal rejection of some, request to designate this site. They say, we believe that the groundwater contamination is not from the mill site, and if that's so, it would not qualify that, and then agree to a meeting. That seems to me to be an invitation to disabuse them of their belief, not a unequivocal finding that there is no contamination that's tied to the mill unless it doesn't qualify. So I think there is a serious final agency action problem in this case. For that reason, on the statute itself and the jurisdictional question, I think the court understands our argument, which is that A1 says you shall designate processing sites. Processing sites are defined by necessity to include these vicinity properties, and subsection D says designations under this section, the full section, not just limited to A1, and so that bars review here. Unless there are questions about that, I ask that the court affirm the district court.
With respect to the cooperative agreement with the Navajo Nation, it's lightly discussed, if at all, in all three briefs. What do you see as coming out of that, or what? Does the cooperative agreement give the Navajo Nation any rights beyond the rights of an ordinary owner of a site?
I don't think so, because, you know, always there's going to be a cooperative agreement either with a state or with a tribe. I mean, that's the way the statute works, is you set up a cooperative agreement. This is pretty much boilerplate stuff. It refers right back to the designation authority, the section that they rely on. So it doesn't really add anything beyond the statute. Plus, the cooperative agreement has its own dispute resolution provisions, and the Navajo has the ability to terminate for, you know, non-performance, whatever. I don't think it gives them some further right to come into court without complying with those provisions first.
Any rights vis-a-vis non-performance besides a right to terminate? Have a right to go to the Court of Federal Claims or
the dispute resolution provision has, you know, procedures for resolving sort of internally both questions of fact and questions of law, and that's at the Joint Appendix A80 has the disputes and how you go through that process. And it's resolved, you know, internally before you have any right to go to court under that agreement. So,
and then once it's resolved or not resolved, I take it internally, then what are the rights of the nation?
I as you said, we didn't focus a lot on this, I'll have to look here and make sure I get this right.
But I take it what you're telling us, inferentially anyway, is that to the extent that that may have given the Navajo Nation rights beyond the rights of an ordinary site owner, nothing that's involved here would be in disparagement of those rights.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think, you know, the provision that they rely on, you know, says you shall designate vicinity properties under your authority from time to time, so that it sort of necessarily requires looking at the statute to see, you know, what that authority is and whether you've exercised it. It doesn't place an additional, you know, obligation beyond what's in the statute. And then you have this dispute resolution provision as well. So I don't think it really adds anything.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
All right, counsel for El Paso.
Very briefly, Your Honor, just a couple of quick points. First, I don't think there's any question that the government has acknowledged that radioactive contamination from the mill is at the landfill, which is what it was called in the congressional testimony that we quote on pages 12 and 13 of our brief. That was acknowledged to Congress. With respect to the 160 site, the Navajo believe that there is a groundwater problem there. But it hasn't been characterized yet, and as I noted, the appropriation is limited to surface remediation. So that's unknown. Those are facts that I just don't know the answer to. It is true that DOE has published in the Federal Register notices of inclusion of additional vicinity properties, and the few that I've looked at, and I haven't done a complete survey, do talk about including. They don't talk about designating vicinity properties. They talk about including. But, of course, here we have a denial, and I guess they don't. I haven't seen any denials. I'm not sure if I've seen denials published in the Federal Register.
Take one more shot at it. I still don't see why including can't be part of the designation process. Including it in the designated processing site.
It is, Your Honor.
Tell
under
me why that's not the case.
It is part of the designation process, right, explicitly under E1.
Exactly.
Under E1, but E1 is expressly limited to the first year, just as the designation authority in 7912A is limited to the first year. After the first year, DOE's authority to make designations does not exist. And so what happens under E2
after the first year is not part of a designation. I don't include, frankly, understand.
Does include any area described in 7911.6 as part of a processing site designated under this section?
As part of a designated processing site, that's right. I don't get from that language that what DOE is doing there is making a designation. Designation was previously made in the first year by the terms of the statute, is my reading. Just lastly, the cooperative agreement, of course, does not talk about designating vicinity properties, but identifying them. So, contrary.
So your understanding, just back to Judge Tatel's questions, of the way the statute was designed to work, was there was going to be this first year of designations, the reports would be given to Congress, and then interested parties could come to the agency under E2?
Well,
I
think DOE, maybe on its own under E2, had continuing authority to, this was to be a comprehensive program to clean up all of the waste and all of the radioactive material from these mill sites. It wasn't going to be done in the first year. It wasn't done in the first year. It's still not done at these two sites. DOE has.
When Judge Tatel was originally asking you about under E2, there is this reference back to the definition section.
Yes.
And the definition section talks about the processing sites.
Yes.
Which includes these vicinity properties. Isn't that your problem?
No, because they're not designated. The definition is only of processing sites. No part of a processing site comes into the program unless DOE takes action. In the first year, they can designate.
Your theory is that during the first year, they do designations, and after that, everything's an inclusion. That's your theory.
Yeah.
Yes, but on Judge Rogers' question, I think it's an important point, because the definition in the statute is of processing sites, the mills and the vicinity properties, neither of which come into the program unless DOE does something. DOE can designate in the first year and bring the mill in and bring the vicinity properties in by designating the first year. Or, after the first year, they can't make any designations anymore, but they can include additional properties. Unless DOE does that, those vicinity properties, they're part of the definition of processing sites, but they're not inside the program yet. And so the fact that vicinity property is part of the definition, I don't think it's the government anywhere, because DOE has to take action of some kind to bring those properties into the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. let's see, Mr.
Taylor.
Yes, Counsel for the Navajo Nation. Did you have anything further?
You're giving me an opportunity.
I'm giving you another minute.
I actually have a question about it. Could you respond to Government Counsel's point about the cooperative agreement?
I'm sorry. I didn't hear your question.
Could you respond to Government Counsel's point about the cooperative agreement?
Oh, I don't think. I think Mr. Ray indicated that there were no new obligations. And I think that's what Judge Williams also suggested. I agree there are no new or separate obligations, but the point that I was making is they come separately, pursuant to a separate section of UMTRCA. The cooperative agreement is 7915, and 7912 is the one that has the judicial preclusion, not 7915.
Well, that was are all agreements, is everything that's done under the statute done pursuant to a cooperative agreement, including during the first year?
I don't believe that would be a correct.
Well, are there cooperative agreements involving projects undertaken during the first year?
I can't answer that question. I can tell you the Navajo Nation cooperative agreement, the first one, didn't come into place until 1983.
Uh-huh. Okay.
All right.
Thank you, counsel. We will take the case under advisement.